Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Australia, where it's summer and we're all jealous, Jennifer Clouston. Jennifer, welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, because you're warm and you get to swim in the ocean. And yeah, of course, it's good to be here.
Yeah. Every day throughout the whole year, we can swim in the ocean. It's that beautifully warm.
Oh, man.
Oh. So jealous. So jealous.
I had to shovel some snow this morning.
Yeah. You should come and visit.
Hey, I'll tell you what. That is the, I've said that a million times. I'm not an overseas traveler, but Australia is right at the top of the list, but only if I could be there a month.
Oh, okay. Why only a month?
Well, that's the minimum, and that's just because it takes so stinking long to get there.
It is. You know, I'm very fortunate. I've lived in two amazing countries. I was born and lived in South Africa until I was about 42. Beautiful country as well. And then I came to Australia, and my adopted country has been very lucky for me. I'm very fortunate to live in this beautiful country. It's lovely.
That's quite a move. What makes that move happen?
It is a big move in ways that I never really anticipated. And I had two teenage children. My son Gareth was 16. Ooh. And my daughter was 13. So it was very hard on them. But it was a decision. You know, Australia said, yes, you can come and live here. And we literally packed our bags in 3 months. We were here. I miss my family in South Africa terribly. But as I said, we are so happy here. And my family is growing here. So it's good. It's very good. Nearly 20 years later.
Well, yay for you. Yay for you. Well, that was the most interesting thing. So my question is, which came first? Was it the quilting, the embroidery, or the crazy quilting? I assume the crazy quilting was after the other two.
Yeah, it was. When I was a young mom, I've always been interested in sewing. Obviously, I grew up with a mother who sewed, an absolute perfectionist, and I had a grandmother who was a constant inspiration for me. Her hands were always busy, you know. She was either tatting or playing patience or crocheting or, I don't know, she was always busy. And the rugs that she crocheted were actually quite unfortunate because she didn't really worry about what yarn she was using. She just crocheted, and she had an expression. I think it had something to do with idle hands or devil's work or something. I don't know. It was very serious, but she wasn't a serious lady. And I think she was a huge influence on me because I learned the joy of just of simply creating for no rhyme or reason, just to keep my hands busy. And so when I was a young mom, I went to my first patchwork lesson and I was absolutely hooked. And Di Sturgis, my teacher, did everything by hand. So that tickled my fancy greatly. And then I went to a talk with the amazing Rosalie Dace in South Africa and was on crazy quilting. And I just was hooked and I just dived straight in. And from then on, it was, something I did for myself really and by myself. It was, great. I enjoy it immensely.
So what draws you to the crazy quilt?
You know, Beth, so many things. I think one of the main things is that I think it's one of the quilting genres that is totally unique to the maker. I think, you know, we all have our own stitch fingerprints. Some of us are big, some of us do small embroidery, and it's very, very difficult to actually duplicate a crazy quilt. I know when I wrote my first book, I had to duplicate something exactly for the publishers, and I found that really hard because on any given day, my mood actually influences the way I embroider. And so that's one of the main reasons I love crazy quilting, and also I like the history. And it actually asks something of me. It asks me to sort of be still, to stay in the moment. I have to really have all my things scattered out in front of me. It just, I don't know, it's something, does something to my little soul, I think.
Because your work is I remember when I first saw your first book, the Foolproof Crazy Quilting book. It came into my library. They always prop the new books up on the shelf so we can see them.
Yeah.
And of course, to entice us to check them out. And I was like, oh, I need that book. And
that's good.
Because your illustrations are just lovely. And I was just curious because you don't add a whole lot of embellishments to your quilt.
No.
At least not in that one.
No. In fact, I don't really. I think yes, I prefer to use embroidery, and I also like a clean version of a crazy quilt, meaning that I can actually see the shapes within the block. So I don't like I meander over my seams and they sort of spread out, but I'm very heavily influenced by the Zulu beading from South Africa. Their beading is, you know, strong and busy. And so my crazy was, I think, influenced by that, was to go to make it strong and profound, but strong without, I mean, I am tizzy, but I like it clearer, if that makes sense. Cleaner.
Okay, see, that helps me. That helps me a lot. Because, see, Beth and I were talking just a couple minutes before you signed on there. Because you're interesting to me in that I really like your embroidery. Your straight embroidery is beautiful, and I've already chewed up a few minutes just staring at it. But I've always found crazy quilting, and you know, no, don't be offended by this, but I've always found it to be messy.
Yes.
And I struggle with it. And then and then Beth really enjoys it. But I appreciate the art. You know, I appreciate what's going on, and I appreciate the art. Just to my eye, it strikes me as messy. But your crazy quilting works much better for me than most. And you just described why. You just helped me identify why, is because there's a little more order to it.
Yes, and I don't really buy into that. Well, I think it's a misnomer, so it's my personal opinion here, is that, you know, there's an opinion out there that on crazy quilting, anything goes. I disagree with that, because if you look at, you know, beautiful antique crazy quilts, you can see that the woman took time with the layout of the fabric and where the embroidery was placed. And so I actually think that crazy quilting needs more restraint than just a free, I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong in that. And as I said, it's just my personal opinion. So I like the person to be drawn into my crazy quilting, to sort of come closer than to move back and see the crazy quilt as a whole. Does that make sense?
Well, my vote is for you to keep doing it your way.
Well, and I think you're right. I think sometimes, you know, having tried to do crazy quilting and not ever completed one yet, it's easy to get become too involved in putting a lot of stitches in, you know, because you have that, you think, oh, I can do this and I can do that. And then it looks terrible. There's no sense of design, no composition on the piece. And I think that's what's appealing to yours, is that it still has that sense of design and composition. Like the hexagons on yours, you use the feather stitch around that, and that kind of brings it in.
My favorite stitch.
I like that one too, the feather stitch. Oh, that's a fun stitch to do.
And you know, Beth, also, I think, you know, we're very spoiled nowadays. We have every bit of fabric, lace, buttons, trim at our disposal. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we must use it on on every square that we possibly can, you know? I don't know. That's my opinion.
That's right. I think you're right. And I think you're right. And do you think there's kind of like a resurgence towards crazy quilting because of the ability to get so many different fabrics and beads and doodads?
Yeah, you know, I think another reason why I like crazy quilting, and Gary, you might appreciate this, is that I think you either like crazy quilting or you actually don't. There's no people who sort of sit in the middle. You know, we are passionate about it, or it's really not our thing. And so the amount of people that actually do it, we are a small little bunch of people. But I do think that social media has helped that a lot, in that there's more crazy quilting out there. So it's you know, easier for us to see different techniques and styles of it, you know. So maybe that's why, you know, my classes are full. I'm very fortunate that I actually teach about 15 classes every month locally on crazy quilting and embroidery. And there's more than often a waiting list for that. So maybe there's a comeback, maybe there's a turnaround to just general handwork as opposed to machine work. I don't know.
Well, that's where, for me, like I said, it's not my kind of thing. No, it's not.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the art, and I also appreciate the freedom that it offers, because it really does open the floodgates, if you will. But then then at some point, I think there needs to be some restraint, or it just becomes just a pile of stuff.
Well said. Yeah, well said. I think restraint is, that's a good way of saying it.
And,
for me.
So Crazy Quilt suggests no plan, no nothing. Do you still have some kind of at least a loose plan when you start one of these projects?
You know, Gary, for me, in all forms of embroidery or quilting or anything like that, my approach is slightly different. I don't sort of have an end game to anything. I much prefer the process of actually doing the project. So the end result is an added bonus.
Beth, right there. See, I love her. I love her right out of the gate. See?
Thank you, Gary. So for me, I get my sort of payback or something in the actual doing.
Yes.
So there's very little planning involved. But one thing that I am fastidious about, funny enough, in teaching and in my own work, is a color palette. And I think that is much more important than anything, because I think no amount of beautiful embroidery can cover an unfortunate color palette. It's just, you know, it's not going to work. So for me, there's not much planning. I just begin something, and how it ends, it ends. And if it ends or doesn't, that's also okay.
So let's say you're getting ready to start a project.
Yeah.
Do you pull together some threads, or do you pull just a few threads and a few fabrics, or do you pull, I think I might just pull everything?
No. So I begin all my, even in my embroidery and my crazy quilting, I pull my background fabrics out. So that's my starting point. So when I did my hexagons, for example, that was very influenced by my childhood in growing up in South Africa, the Indian saris. You know, you can see their color palette coming. And also, as I said, the strong Zulu beadwork. So that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to create, this joyous kind of bright, vibrant South African feel. So I pulled my background fabrics out first. And then once that's done, I then have all my threads in front of me and I audition them as I go. And I go, yeah, no, whatever. That's how I go.
Okay. All right. I was wondering about that because, you know, I know people who they keep it very limited and they pull out just a few things. And then I know other people who are like, okay, they have a basket full of their threads, you know, so that way, and then they audition them as they go, but they have a whole bunch that they need to go through an audition. And I was just curious how you went about that.
Yeah. So I'm very fortunate to have quite a big work area. And I'm not fastidious about how I store my threads or ribbons or beads. In fact, I work in quite a mess, which suits me fine because I'd actually prefer to be stitching than, you know, rolling thread onto bobbins and things like that. and so I just have tubs. All my silk ribbon is just piled in because I find that easier to work with silk ribbon than to wind it onto bobbins. I find it preserves them actually better if they're just sort of lumped, you know, softly into glass bowls. And then I pull out, I do keep my color palette quite limited, actually, Beth, you're quite right, but I do have everything out to begin with. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mm.
We're officially starting a club of process stitchers.
Yeah.
That's so, Beth. You won't be able to gain entry, but.
No, wait a second. You don't know how many whips I have.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe you qualify. We'll see.
I also noticed you use a lot of vintage.
Oh, yes.
Is that making more of a comeback? I see a lot more of it on Instagram. People using vintage things that they find at the flea market, at Goodwill, at estate sales. Do you see that happen in Australia too?
Yes. You know, strangely enough, they thrift stores are called op shops in Australia. And in South Africa, well, where I live, there weren't any. So when I immigrated to Australia, I saw these op shops and they just had all these amazing laces and vintage tablecloths. Oh, I was in my seventh heaven and I just bought them. So that was really interesting to me. But I do like the idea of using something that somebody else has had before me. I like the fact that it's had a previous life. I do use pre-used fabrics a lot and threads. Yes.
And do you have people giving you stuff all the time on top of it?
Absolutely. Okay. I do. Yes.
Here, Jennifer will take this stuff. Get it out of the house.
Yeah, they all know this. So, yes.
I know that feeling. I just had someone at my church was cleaning out her mother's house. And she goes, we asked at, some of the shops, the resale shops, they said, no, they didn't have any use for it. And she said, well, would you want it, Beth? And I was like, well, I won't be able to use all of it. I said, but I belong to a group. And between us, we would probably use all of it. And she had vintage calendars that were on linen. And she was like, oh, these are, are you really going to use them? I'm like, oh, yes. Absolutely. Yes, I'm going to use those.
And everything was so much more beautiful way back, wasn't it? The linens,
And they have a lovely feel to them. And we dunk them into the dye baths is what we do, especially if they're stained. And
yes. I don't mind a bit of staining. I also use laces and, fabrics that I can't get the stains on, because if it's really beautiful, that's part of the journey. And it doesn't really worry me all that much. Right. Yeah.
Mm. So do you dye any of your own things?
Not really. The only thing that I do dye, and I don't think you can call it dyeing, is if I don't have a correct color silk ribbon, for example, or thread, and it's very bright and I'm using a muted color palette, I will get Parisian Essence. And I don't know if you get it in the States, but it's sort of a thing they put in gravy. It's quite awful, but and I paint it on my silk ribbon. And so from a vibrant color, it takes the color down into this beautiful muted shade, these beautiful muted shades. And I do that once my crazy is actually completed. So I will use the ribbon. I don't dye it beforehand. I will stitch with the ribbon. And then when it's on my work, I will take a very fine paintbrush and just shade away the bits that are too bright and shiny for me.
Oh, my. I've never been that brave yet.
That slight pause was Beth making crazy notes just to go new ideas.
And you know, another thing that I do is I have a mantra, is start where you are and use what you have. I think we've become consumers instead of creatives. We're so used to buying a pattern and having all the threads involved. And then the minute we run out of that thread, we rush out to the shop and buy it, or we wait for days for it to be delivered. And for me, creativity leaves your room at that point. For me, it's about using what I have in front of me. And there's a challenge in that. It really challenges you to go, if I use that thread, but I change the stitch, that'll work. So that's also part of my mantra, very much so when I'm teaching and also when I'm doing my own work.
I like that. Start where you are and use what you have.
Yes. And that goes for my skills as well. And for my students in my class, I find that it's very important for me to make my students feel capable of doing something. So if I bombard them with a knotted feather stitch when they can't do feather, that's a problem for me. So I pare back everything and I work according to what they presented me with, and then I move on from there.
But that's an interesting view, that when you're waiting for those last two colors of skeins of thread, the creativity is gone.
It's gone. Gary, it is. For me, it's gone. Yep.
Huh.
And also, I think for me too, you know, growing up in South Africa during the apartheid era, it was really interesting because it was a devastating time for the country, and we had to change. But during that time, other countries applied sanctions to us. So certain countries didn't play sport against us or sell us cars or white goods. And one of the things that we didn't get was typical, you know, the real American quilting fabric, for example. We just couldn't get it in our quilt shops. There was one that we could buy it from. And so in South Africa, we, as a young quilter, I had to look outside the square. And that's what we did as quilters. And Rosalie Daces and the Odette Tolstorff, they made quilts that are quintessential, they are, and were and still are, sorry, quintessentially South African. I can go to a quilt show in South Africa and I will know exactly where I am. So that also helped me as a quilter because I had to look outside the square. And so it's not a problem for me to not have what I want to have, even though I live in a country of excess like Australia.
Talk about that South African influence. Does it stay with you naturally? I mean, is it ingrained in you, or do you consciously, after so many years being in Australia, consciously have to work it into what you do?
No, so that's quite an interesting question. I don't know if I consciously do it, but I think the colors are in me because I grew up with that. I grew up with that vibrancy. Yes, I don't know. No, I don't think I consciously do.
So you don't know any other way then? Okay.
No.
That's fine. No, I just, does it fade away over time? Or, and so it's clearly just ingrained in you. It's the way you see the world. And so your art reflects that then.
Yeah, but I do work in other different colors. You know, I'm quite eclectic. I sort of work in sort of pastel colors someday and bright colors the next. I'm not really loyal to myself or to my genre, which I think sometimes is a problem for me as a creator and as a tutor. because I'm not recognized for one, or maybe crazy quilting, but I'm not recognized for one specific thing. I teach a whole different array of handwork.
Right. So could you address like boro stitching? I noticed that in your Instagram, and that's something that's starting to see it more in the United States. Could you explain that maybe to some of our listeners what boro stitching is?
Yes, basically it's an ancient form of Japanese darning. So what happens is your garment is got a hole in it. You simply take another piece of fabric and you just pop it on top and you do a series of running stitches over those two layers to keep it in place. That's basically what it is. It's just a running stitch
So why do you think it's gaining in popularity?
You know, do you not think perhaps, Beth, we are going back to a more traditional form of handwork, perhaps? As I said before, I'm not one to sit at my sewing machine. It's just foreign to me. I'd rather, I don't know what I'd rather do. So for a long time, there was a lot of drive towards machine quilting and machine embroidery. And as I said, maybe that's just my algorithm in my Facebook or my Instagram that's picking up on this more traditional form of embroidery. So I don't really know why. It's also, for me, it creates a very interesting background. I like the juxtaposition of that naive background and then soft sort of embroidery. That I like that opposition, that
Me too. I mean, and that's why I think maybe that why it comes up on my Instagram feed also, because I like how it looks. It's very, it's subtle maybe.
Yeah.
But then, when you put on top of it or add to it the embroidery stitches, it just gives it just enough pop.
It does. And it adds texture, doesn't it?
Yes. And I like the adding of texture.
Yeah, me too.
And maybe it goes along too with what you were saying about using what you have.
Yes. Yep. Maybe. Yeah, because that's what I have at my disposal, don't I? And then I don't want this sort of just a solid matte color behind my embroidery. But if I layer it and then add another background stitch, then it becomes I've used what I have. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Got my wheels spinning here about are we going back to older techniques?
Mm.
You really got me. That kind of flipped a switch for me in that.
Yeah.
Because we see a lot of techniques emerging. Well, global pandemic gives, I wish I had the time. These people say they have time. I'm jealous of them. But just been an awful lot of stitching around the globe in the past year, and are people now taking the time to discover other and or older techniques that just never really came to the surface? I don't know. That's interesting.
Mm, it is. Yeah, even knitting. I don't know what it's like in the States, but crocheting, knitting, all that is making a huge comeback in Australia and has been for a while over the few years. And especially the younger women, and they sort of tend, younger moms, they tend to be starting, crocheting and knitting and quilt making. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
And the idea of again, using what you have, you're stuck at home. Absolutely. What do I have at my disposal? What can I use? They do have the internet is there, and you say, oh, well, I have thread, I have needle.
What do I right. know? I know how to knit. Do I? Because I learned that as a child, perhaps, or,
Right. Right.
Mm.
Well, see, now there's an interesting tie-in, because what's happening everywhere when it comes to getting threads and ground cloth? The supply chain is broken. People are having to wait. And so are they just literally being forced to use what they have and start to be creative? I don't know.
I don't really know. We in Australia, we were very, very fortunate with COVID, because we were only locked down, especially to me in Queensland. I think we were only in total lockdown for maybe 8 weeks or something like that. But I could still cycle to the beach and I could still swim. Obviously, the quilt shops were closed. I couldn't teach. And what I noticed straight after when I came back from COVID, I don't know if I'm going off on a tangent here, was that my classes were never as busy. There was a more of a demand for my classes than there was pre-COVID. And I don't know if that was because we were in isolation and then we wanted to be with people, and it was going back to that ancient form of that ancient form of going back and being with women and stitching and that community and that support. So that was really interesting, because some of my classes, in fact, most of my classes are filled with women who have been coming to me literally for 10 years. Now, lots of people say, oh, Jenny, you can't be a very good teacher because they're still coming to you. but what I think it is that there's no noisy sewing machines. We're gathering in a small bunch. Our heads are down and we're sharing stories. We're sharing buttons. And I think that's why they stay. If I take my ego out of it, it's actually not so much about me, but it's about what they're getting from each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful thing.
I we're still not able to meet in my quilt guild, my stitching guild.
Oh, wow.
I'm an officer in the guild. So I am hearing a roundabout way people are lonely. They are really missing getting together. We never discussed politics or religion. We just sat and stitched and admired each other's work and shared our love of stitching. And it's very, very difficult. It's
it is.
Extraordinarily difficult.
And I can't imagine, because what are you, 10 or how many months are you now into your total lockdown? It's a long time.
Yes. Yeah, 10. Yeah. 10 months, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I, you know,
because we can't control ourselves.
Oh, no. Wow. And it actually shows us how we are reliant on each other. We take each other for granted, and the support that we give each other, I think, too. And I think this COVID has shown us many things, perhaps.
Yeah, yes. I keep looking for the positive things that will come out of this ugly time. And I think there's some psychological things that are going to shift and shift permanently. And needlework is the kind of activity that seems to fit in that shift. Because I've said this more than once, but a friend of mine who they bought a trampoline for the backyard with two teenage daughters, and his post on Instagram was, "The kids found the end of the internet, and so now we got to do something else." And I just, exactly. But I think it spoke on a couple of levels, because I think we're all learning that sitting scrolling through pictures on Instagram, there's no productive end to it.
Yeah. No, there isn't, and that leads into what I said earlier, is that we become consumers. We're consuming other people's work instead of actually stitching and getting into it, you know? I mean, I'm the first one. I love my Instagram. But we just consume instead of, we need to create more. So as much as there's Pinterest out there, I always say to my students, you've just spent 45 minutes on Pinterest. What have you stitched?
yep. Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. And, right. You know, my project's not done. Well, take half the time you spent on Facebook and Pinterest and Instagram and use that for needle and thread, you might be amazed. Yeah. And I'm speaking to myself too. I'm just guilty as the next one, you know.
And you know, it was really interesting, because when it was shut down, I missed teaching in a way that I didn't expect myself to miss it. You know, I thought, oh, what am I going to do? And I'm not very good on social media, and I have this blog. So I decided, well, what I'll do is I'll get my blog out that I haven't used in ages, and I'll start a project. And it was step by step, and I, you know, with 9 little squares, and off I went. And you know, I got nothing out of it. People messaged me, and I didn't do it for that reason. But for me personally, putting it out there was strange for me then. And I suppose I've got to learn to do that in this world, don't I, Beth and Gary? I think I've got to learn to get my profile out there and maybe do more online courses, because people are asking me. But, oh, I so enjoy face-to-face, you know.
Right.
And it's hard. It's hard to make that step from teaching live than to doing a video. I had to teach my guild something using a video. And I kept saying, this would be so much easier if we could just meet and I could look at their faces and say, okay, they're getting it, I can move on, or no, they're not getting it, I need to.
I can read their body language just by a sort of slight sort of shift of that one shoulder. I'll go, she doesn't like this. Or
she has that glazed look like, oh, she did not get that stitch.
Or do I have to do this?
I got to go do this one again. So, yes, and that's hard. It's hard when you have to make that switch to online. And
It sure is.
Oh,
I might not have to. I'm very busy. So I keep saying to myself, Jennifer, you're very busy teaching. You know, many, many classes, and I travel interstate to teach. So, you know, I'm thinking that's all I need to do.
I got to ask you, what made you decide to write a book? Because now you've got three, you've got two that are out, and you've got one more that's coming.
Yes. So what happened was, my students used to say to me, Jenny, all your ideas are in your head. Can't you just, you know, write them down for me? And I'd go, no. And then they said, I think you should write a book. So I thought, oh, okay. I have this very capable husband. And I thought, well, he can help me because, as you can hear, I'm quite scatty and all over the place. And he's very regimented engineer. So I thought I'll set him a job to do. And then the book, I won't mention any names, in Australia that I sort of contacted, they were going under administration. And they said to me, can we forward this book proposal to these publishers in the States? And I went, yep, okay. Didn't think anything of it. Didn't even really register that it was C&T Publishers who actually publish Judith Baker Montana's books, who is the doyen of Crazy Quilting. Yes. Otherwise, I don't think I would have sent my, you know, book proposal to them. Months went by, and then one Saturday morning, just come back from my early morning swim, and the phone rang. And it was C&T Publishers, and they said, we're very interested in your book. We're going to go ahead. I nearly fell off my chair, off my, well, I don't know what I was doing. Because I'm very mindful that, you know, book publishers seek quilt makers and who have an online presence, who win awards at quilt shows, who, you know, have millions of followers. And I was none of that. I was just this little quilter on the east coast of Australia that nobody knew of. And, wow, they took a punt, and here we are, three books later. That's how it happened.
That's, I see, and these books are, I mean, if people are interested in crazy quilting, what, because I was teaching crazy quilting at the time to teach basic stitches. People were asking, how do I do these stitches? And it's one of the things I'd recommend because they would, you have such great seam treatments, and that's, it's hard to do that when you're first starting. What stitch should I do here? You look at it, it's like a blank canvas. Yeah, you've sewn all your little pieces together, but now what?
You
really go through step by step.
I did. And that's, I wanted, whoever bought the book was to feel, to pick it up and go, you know what? I can do this. It was broken down to the nth degree, wasn't it, Beth? I mean, to the stitch, to the needle, to the thread, to the bead. It was... Yeah. You know, thanks to my husband, he did that for me. And so it was a lot of work. And I think, judging from how many hexagon quilts there are on Pinterest that people tell me and people share on social media, it actually has been a very successful book for me. So it's been great.
Your husband helped. How did your husband help you with this? Did he do the stitch?
Yes, he was phenomenal. So all I did was... I stitched them. I just stitched my hexagons, and he took the photograph of them and he did the layout. And it was wonderful because how I wanted the book to look with all the call outs on each hexagon, he did that for me. So the whole layout of the book was my husband. So all I did was stitch, and then he did everything else. He prepped it and sent it to C&T Publishers. And he's done that with all three of my books. In fact, I could not do it without him. No.
You just made a whole lot of book writers very jealous that they didn't have to do all that work.
Yeah, because also sitting at a computer, So honestly, I'm very thankful to him. It was amazing. Quite amazing.
Engineers just dig into that stuff. Yep.
Yes, and they're very particular, aren't they? And they, yes. You know, I could use a word which I won't use online, but on air. But that, you know, they sort of, you know, like everything just so and so.
Being married to an engineer and having two engineers in the house. Yes.
Yeah, you know.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, see, and I'm a magazine editor, so I know how I, you know, yeah, everything has to be just so all the time. And
okay.
And so you can be the artist and you got somebody to do that work. That's very nice.
Very nice. And I'm very excited about my third book, actually, because it's very much how I sew, you know, that you start where you are, use what you have approach. So it's flower embroidery, but, you know, we don't only have to do a stem stitch to make a stem of a flower. There's very many different stitches that we can use. And so that's what my book is about, is creating backgrounds for your embroidery and designing your own little garden and all different stitches that you can use and how they look in different threads. I'm actually seriously excited about this book. I don't know how everybody else will feel about it, but I love it.
Well, of the three, that's the one I'm buying. So,
yeah, and I'm looking forward to it coming out. That's because it you know, having the other two here, yes. You know, I need to add to my collection, you know.
Yes.
When can we look for that book?
Evidently in May. 2021. Yeah, no, it's very soon. Yes.
Great. So, yeah, so that one is foolproof flower embroidery.
Yes.
And so it's is it going to take us, I mean, is it a project book or is it a here's how to get started and create your own thing book?
It's not a project book. It's more like a workbook. So I take you, as I said, you start with your backgrounds. You're going to choose your background, how to make a background, what you use, and then how to draw it using the rule of thirds, draw your stem, choose the stitch that you'd like to use for your stem, and then all different variations of stitches to make up petals, buds, twigs, you name it, and you'll have this beautiful little floral thingy.
New technical term, floral thingy. Yeah.
Floral thingy, yes.
Yeah, because you know what? You're just enjoying the process and what it gets used onto, well, you know, so that'll be it.
it's more about the process.
It's the process.
That's right.
Not so much the project.
Not so much the end result.
Take us through, obviously a hobbyist growing up, needlework, is your pastime, your keep your hands busy kind of thing. How does that transition into what is today's business? Was it conscious or just gradual?
No, it was, I didn't really have much say in it really. So when
okay.
So I just sewed, and like Beth, I belong to a group, a guild. When I first moved to Australia 19 years ago, I was teaching a little bit in South Africa before I came, especially to children and to smaller groups. But when I came here, people asked me to teach them crazy quilting. And so it started from there, the small guild groups, and then I sort of moved out and taught at other venues and traveled. And then the book arrived. So I didn't really have much say in it. It sort of grew like topsy. I was very fortunate. I don't really have to work all that much. I think I could do a little bit more work on promoting myself, but I'm happy where I am, actually.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah.
Because you can promote yourself, and then you get to a point where it's all consuming and the art starts to suffer. So, you know,
there's
kind of a fine line gray area there where you're in a happy spot and it sounds like you're there.
Yes, and I have got a lovely community around me that, you know, so I'm happy for now. Yes, so, yep.
So do you mainly teach then in Australia? Do you teach out of the country?
I have been asked to teach out of the country, but it's never really happened because of my commitments in in Australia. You know, when I've been asked to go to America or the States, for example, I've had my commitments here first. So I haven't really taken them up. And then COVID hit, so that's shut down quite a few venues. I would like to travel, yes. I'm not a great traveler. I'm a nervous traveler, so. But I get on it and I deal with it and I take stuff to get me on the airplane. And once I'm there, I'm good. So.
Like my mom, she always had to take something before they would put her on a plane, but she was fine once she got there. She was she was good.
Yes.
So when you teach, do you have your own studio and teaching space, or do you travel to places?
I travel to places. So I do my house. I could have a studio in my home. However, I choose actively not to, because I think it's important that we keep our local quilt shops going. And we've had quite a lot of quilt shops, a large amount of quilt shops shut in Australia in the 19 years that I've been here, mainly because of online you know, people are buying online. And for me, that's very sad because once again, we're losing community. And for me, stitching is a community. It's not a, it's about gathering of people and ideas. And so I teach at a local quilt shop called the Patchwork Angel, which is in a beautiful 1930s church. It's absolutely gorgeous. And then I'm based also at a shop in the mountains, in the hinterland. So I'm at the coast. Then I sort of travel about an hour and I travel to this other little shop. So as I said, that keeps me busy with 15 classes a month. And then I travel interstate to wherever I need to go.
Wait, back up the truck here.
Yeah.
Between those two places, you're doing 15 classes a month?
Yeah.
Holy smokes. Wow. Yes.
As I said, you know, Gary, I'm spoiled because I'm getting my pay off, aren't I? I don't need to sort of teach anywhere else. I've got these lovely women that I know, and they, you know, 10 years in the making, they're my friends, and, you know, it's a lovely community.
But that's just, I mean, that's terrific that you have that kind of a schedule going, but then also, no wonder you're so busy. Just the prep work for that kind of schedule is significant.
It's very, and also to stay fresh, because I teach so many classes, my class, and I don't really, I teach in a way that everybody sort of does their own thing. I have projects, but it's very important for me as a tutor is for people to produce their own work, to stamp themselves in their work. So I don't really have a we just gather and they say, I want to make this clutch. And I'll go, yeah, bring that. And so it takes quite a lot out of me creatively because everybody's doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. So that's quite tiring. And then also I have to stay fresh within myself so that my brain doesn't follow the same neural pathways and, you know, do the same stitches over and over. But I do things to actually help me to keep fresh in my own mind. And I do daily kind of stream of consciousness stitching, which I got from the Writer's Way, the book Writer's Way. Yes. She recommended that you do that with writing. And so every day I begin my day sort of, I run and I swim and I do whatever. And I do half an hour of just simply picking up a piece of fabric or a background that I've prepared, and for no rhyme or reason, I just stitch, boom, boom, boom. And, yep, it helps me a lot.
Oh, okay. Now I got a question.
Yeah, okay.
Because right. I know what you're talking about. It's the Julie Cameron, isn't that her name?
That's right. You've got it.
All right. So I do that stream of consciousness, just it's kind of like get everything out of your brain so it's not floating around up there, and then I do Bible and I start my day. That's how I do. But okay, when you say you do stitching, okay,
yeah,
what do you mean? I instead of writing, what do you just have like a needle and thread, and you just kind of like take a deep breath, no music, no nothing, and just start stitching?
Yeah. So what I do is, so for example, the one day I will wake up and I will go, I think I will prep this little octagon. And as I said, I work in a bit of a mess. So I have a bucket full of little bits of laces and offcuts of fabric. And I will say, today I'll just do, I don't overthink it. It's going to be a 6-inch octagon, and I lay the fabric down and I maybe will do some borrow work on it. And that's my half an hour gone for that day. And so it's prepped for the next day. And then the next day I will just pick up a thread and I'll go, I'm just going to do chain stitch in a circle or I don't know. And that's how I go. It's not anything. It's sort of like mindless, but.
It's never going to be a finished product. It's just.
That's really interesting because they sometimes are finished products. I did one during COVID where I think I shared it on Instagram, and they were just little pieces of fabric. And that's how it started, the stream of consciousness thing. I started doing these little octagons. They turned into squares eventually, but in the beginning they were octagons. And I just did them and did them. And then I thought, I'm really liking how this is looking. And then it sort of got more structured. So then that, I know it sounds very strange. Then that, because it was getting structured, I had to sort of make it more of a project. Does that make any sense? And then I started on something else. I'm very
That does
sad.
make sense.
Yes.
Okay, so okay then you sent an image of where you used your orts. Would that
Oh,
be
very much
something
so.
similar?
Absolutely. Now, this is where I'm really showing my strangeness, and I'm sort of sharing a part that I find quite odd. So we all have orts, and we have tons of orts. You know, I have jars of them. And my orts normally are quite long. They because I the way I stitch, I'm not going to get into that detail, but I have an ort that's sometimes can be 5 inches long. It's quite long. The minute I've done my herringbone on the seam treatment and I have an ort left over, I use my ort up straight away, and I have the photograph that I sent you was circles, and those were just my ort jars that I had. There was yarn in there from knitting, silk ribbon, and they were just circles. And that for me also is a part of my stream of consciousness, because I will just do that, pick it up, and do the same stitch over and over. But my orts, sorry.
I was just going to say that piece drew me in because my friends always laugh. I love
Yeah.
circles. It's my favorite shape. If I'm going to
Yes.
doodle, I'll doodle a circle.
Yeah. And so basically, I'm doodling with thread, aren't I? I'm just taking my thread and
Yes.
then just using those tiny little bits of thread up. I could have showed you a whole lot of my orts, because I have a system where I work with orts, and it's all very sad, but it's a routine for me, and I, yeah, it feels good, and I enjoy doing it, you know. Don't ask me what I do with the projects of my orts, because it's not important. There's just lots of them.
And I just dumped my ort jar.
Did you?
Yes. But now I'm so sad. Because
Actually
I
will
thought, what
send.
am I going to do with these orts? I thought, well, it's time to, I mean, they were like 2 years worth. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to throw these away. You don't need to keep them anymore. It's just time to move on. And now I'm kicking myself. I could have used them.
And people always say to me, "Oh, Jenny, I've saved you my orts." And I'd go, "No, nah, I don't want your orts. I've got enough orts to keep me busy, please."
See, now you know what to do with your orts, Gary.
Well, I'm sending them to you. Yeah.
No,
Yes. Oh, yeah.
absolutely.
They'll be in the
Oh, no, Gary's
mail.
obviously got a life.
I do. I do.
Gary does it. 5 inches would be a short ort for Gary, I think.
Oh,
I'm way. I really am wasteful. I really am.
okay.
Yeah. No, they're
That's
going
okay.
priority mail to Beth tomorrow. That's all of them.
Oh,
All of them.
no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'm
That's pretty
really
sad.
the stream of consciousness stitching really has me locked in because see that's I have to write for every magazine issue. I have to write an editorial. I hate it.
Yeah.
I just hate it. And it's
Oh,
all of
really?
500 words, but you have to come up with something that actually might make somebody read it. And
Yeah.
I just don't have those kinds of thoughts, Newspaper people who have to do one every day, I'll worship those people because that's talent. But that's a technique I was taught a long time ago, is if you're stuck, just sit down and stream of consciousness, just write stuff. Or sometimes I'll just start writing about what's in the issue, and rarely use that, but
Yeah.
it gets the mind going, and then I come up with something that I have a hook, and then I can
Exactly.
write it. And so now the stitching here. No harm, no foul. Just put thread and cloth
Yeah.
together and see what happens.
Yep. See what happens. And it's interesting to see, as you said, that you don't have to use it for anything.
No.
But it's fascinating for me. Sometimes it leads to something that I go, "Wow, that's amazing to me." But because I'm not end gaming it, and I really don't care what it is, wow, so much freedom in that. It's quite difficult to do, I think, initially. I've been doing it for many, many years now, so it's part of my routine. So, yeah.
Cause see, this is opening a door for me because I've been wanting to try just straight. I've tried surface embroidery, but been wanting to get going and really try to develop some skill with it. And so now I can see just cloth and a hoop sitting
Yeah.
off to the side, and I just pick it up
Yep.
and just play around till I get some proficiency.
Absolutely. And make it bigger and make your stitches bigger, make them smaller, change your thread.
Yes.
Do them right close to you. Yeah, just play.
No project, no nothing. Don't care about the color. Just go.
Interesting enough, don't think about the color at all.
Yeah.
Because that's once again our, you know, our neural pathways. They take us down our favorite way, don't they? All the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
And I normally in the morning, sometimes when I'm listening, you know, to a devotional or something, I will cross stitch because I am kind of hyper. I have a hard time sitting still. Mm. So I'll have a pattern now that does not require me to think about it. And I just cross stitch it. Because it's keeping me from letting my mind wander while I'm listening to the devotional.
Yes. And it's quite, I mean, I know we mustn't use this word, but it's a bit of mindfulness in it as well, isn't there? Because you are saying, okay, be still, stay here, because it's quite hard in the beginning to stay and to not go, oh, well, you know, what is this going to be or what are people going to say about it or anything like that. That never bothers me. What people think about my work is actually immaterial to me. I think because I have, as I said, got my payback already. I have, you know, I've enjoyed doing it. And so.
Well, but that's successful art. I mean, find me a successful artist who cared what people thought. you know what I mean? They never do it.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know that. I just thought I was just arrogant.
No. No, I don't think any artist really cares what other people think. It's what comes out of them and it's their expression.
Yeah.
You either take it or leave it and it's immaterial to them. Yeah.
Yes.
No, I don't think that's snooty or uppity at all. That's just the way it is.
Right.
And
and
you always know that you'll connect with a group of people and there's another group of people that will just walk away. Well, that's all right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Go find your own artist. Yeah. Jennifer, this has been fun. Oh, you got my wheel spinning so fast.
Oh, good. We got Gary's wheel spinning.
Yeah. Oh, is that so hard to do, Beth?
I don't know. Sometimes it seems. Mine are always spinning.
Yes.
Yeah, mine don't spin as quickly or as fast as Beth's. No. Mm-mm. No. Okay, I got a million things to work on now. This has been fantastic. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Well, I hope the sound's been good, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, well, thanks for doing it, and thanks to everybody for listening.